Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, some intelligence, humor, and progressive persuasion. Although Brian's concept was less is more, more or less, in reality, you could never get enough of Brian's magic in your life. Today, all of our regulars are present and accounted for. Historian extraordinaire and guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Holman, and activist and defender of democracy, Kevin Jones, are zooming in from their respective homes here on Vachon. Airplane captain, crash survivor, and best flight instructor I have ever had. Also the only flight instructor I've ever had.
I was going to say.
Truman O'Brien is engineering from the Voice of Vachon, Gene Bosch broadcast studio. And today I am your host, Craig Bellis. I'm sitting here next to Truman in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. Joining us today are representatives of the Vachon Healthcare District, Commissioners Eric Prine and Wendy Noble, and incoming interim superintendent Tim Johnson. In our small talk segment, which we'll be coming up to in a little while, we will be trying to sort out the latest events in the confusing relationship between the healthcare district and CMAR, at least confusing to much of the public. But first, a little check-in here as to what's going on in our world this week. Truman, I'm going to start out with you. Anything going on there last week?
Well, boy, excitement. I'm walking without a cane or anything. For you folks, I'm sure many of you know I've had back surgery a couple of months ago, and I'm improving. Man, I'm ready to dance. Well, maybe not dance, but at least I can walk.
I can vouch for the fact that your attitude is better too.
Oh, thank you.
You're not the mean son of a gun.
That's just not crabby. Well, you know when you're in pain all the time, you can't walk. You just get cranky.
Oh yeah. Yeah, so no question
true.
About
it's
it.
It's true, yeah. But anyway, well, that's what I've been doing.
That's good. Kevin?
Hey, you know, speaking of mobility, I had the opportunity to talk with Local Services Director Bong Santo Domingo this morning, and he mentions that the community van program is also ready to emerge from the COVID, and in order to do so, they are looking for drivers. So those who are interested in helping people get around can contact Lily Coroon, who is a Vachon resident. Lily can be reached, get out your pencils, at 206-773-7003. And so if you'd like to help with mobility both on and off Vachon, Community Vanpool Program, looking for drivers, Lily Coroon, 206-773-7003.
All right. Anything else, Kevin, that you want to share with us?
Oh, that'll do it for the moment.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I should mention. Thank you, Craig, for juggling the gray matter. This Saturday, 9:45, the Get Out the Vote costume party is going to gather. The members of the party are going to gather at the North End Ferry Dock, and then we are going to ride the triangle route in our Get Out the Vote costumes to make sure that we raise awareness of how important it is to get out there and get your ballots turned in. So I'm just bringing up the 9:45 North, and I am got my costume ready. And after this party, I'll tell people what it is. If you want to see it in real life, show up at the North End parking lot 9:45. Bring your camera.
Oh yeah, we will all, whether we're going or not, keep our fingers crossed that there is a ferry to get on for the triangle.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And it's not pouring.
We as well. If we could, I'm glad for the good tidings.
There you
Thank
go.
You.
Hey, Bruce, what have you been up to?
Well, I've actually been researching the ferry docks and the Standard Oil docks in Tramp Harbor. There's a Vashon Park District meeting tonight, 7 p.m., to talk about the options for removing, replacing, rebuilding all that of the Tramp Harbor fishing pier, which is an interesting sort of sequence. It, originally, south of it was the first ferry to Vashon, which ran over to Des Moines in 1916. And then when that stopped running because they opened the North End Ferry, Standard Oil leased that dock. And when it deteriorated, Standard Oil built a newer dock further to the north. And when that deteriorated, they built a third dock to the north of that, which is the current fishing pier. Oh. So trying to figure out dates and times and who did what when, and it's all been very interesting. And also found an incredible photograph in the mid-1960s. The U.S. Navy had a jet-powered hydrofoil that they were testing in Tramp Harbor. We have a picture of it next to the Tramp Harbor fishing dock.
Oh, wow.
Because Standard Oil would refuel both the Boeing hydrofoils and the Navy while they were sort of testing these hydrofoils. So it's been an exciting week. For those of you who are excited by things like history.
That's a lot of stuff. Truman?
Yeah, just a quick question. So are they just going to be discussing it tonight, or are they actually going to make some decision tonight? Do you know, Bruce?
I think tonight is a public input meeting, is my understanding.
Okay.
So it's really to look at the options. I think they've got four options they're looking at this point.
Okay.
So that's my understanding. But if you love Tramp Harbor fishing pier, like many people on the island do, show up, have your voice heard.
Cool. Sometime I got to tell you about the fella I rode on the airplane next to on an airplane flight down to San Francisco. He was like the chief engineer on the Boeing hydrofoil, and kind of gave me all the background on why it failed and why it shouldn't have failed and how it was falling apart because it hit giant manta rays down in South America and that kind of thing.
Wow.
Eric.
Craig, before we went on the air, you said it would be self-serving for me to talk about how hard I have been working on behalf of the people of Vashon on healthcare matters. So I won't.
Somehow you got that in, though.
On a lighter note, Carla and I have been invited to a Halloween party, actually near Cle Elum for the first time in about 30 years.
Wow.
And so we went to Granny's last Friday looking for Halloween costumes, and I ended up picking a bunch of odds and ends. And the only way I could probably describe my costume is it is some sort of hybrid of Liberace and Harpo Marx.
So not enough coverage.
Those are the best kind. Tim, did you assist in the selection of the costume?
Absolutely not.
Wendy, what have you been up to?
Well, mostly I'm just welcoming the blue sky back and the fact that we can breathe and that it's time to get out some warm clothes. It's really nice to actually see this transition. As part of the MRC, I'm still welcoming the fact that we don't get many calls for people saying, I've got a positive COVID test, and we're crossing our fingers that that continues.
For sure. Absolutely.
And wonderful job at the high school.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
I got my third booster down there a couple weeks ago, so I'm all boosted up.
Yay.
Tim.
Well, I was going to say I was selling costumes, but actually, I've been discovering the fact that my buying books hobby is not the same as my reading books hobby, so that's been a little bit of a purging for me. But other than that, I think I've been looking at a new job opportunity, potentially.
And what might that be?
I wonder.
More to come.
I was going to say, more, because stay tuned. Nothing happened in my life in the last week. No, I'm getting ready for Halloween with, I'm going to be here, right here in the Gene Bosch studio, handing out candy, which I've done for many years. I love downtown Vashon during Halloween, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the rains stay away. Although, as my friends in the Czech Republic used to say when we went hiking in Moravia or whatever, you're not made of sugar, you know? So You know, if you don't get wet, you don't go out here in the Northwest. Did I get everyone? I think I did.
Yep.
Yeah. Today is October 25th. It's 14 days till Election Day, 2 weeks from today. Be sure to get out there and vote. You can vote now by mail. It's 30 days until Thanksgiving. 61 days till Christmas. Oh. It's coming up quick. The other thing, today is a bunch of different national and world days. Today is World Pasta Day. It's a good day for warm pasta tonight, comfort food. It's International Artist Day, and we certainly have our share of various artists on Vashon that we should be celebrating. It's National Chucky the Notorious Killer Doll Day, for those of you who are into horror shows. National Greasy Foods Day.
Kind of goes with pasta.
It does. But, you know, greasy foods sometimes hit the spot. And it's National Sourest Day. So my advice is wallow in your petulant mood. Take sulking to new lows. Frown like a clown catching the midnight train out of town. Develop a harumph worth trademarking. Scowl so foul that people will catch a whiff of it before they even see you. That's just how sour you need to be on this day.
Did you pen that or did you?
I stole it.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
I stole it. I didn't have time to pen it.
All right.
I didn't have the skills to pen it either. Today in history, in 1760, King George III assumed his much maligned 59-year reign as King of Great Britain and Ireland, the longest reigning king of Great Britain. His legacy varies depending on who's writing his history, which is oftentimes the case, is it not, Bruce? And we all kind of wonder how our ex-president's history will be written 100 to 200 years from now. You venture a guess on that one, Bruce?
You're muted. You're muted.
Oh, you're muted.
You're muted, Bruce.
It's always hard to predict the future, but my sense is it really will depend on what happens over the next couple of elections. So this, you know, in 2 weeks, and then in 2 years from 2 weeks, and then, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years. You know, remember 1822, you know, 200 years ago. So you're asking us to jump 200 years in the future. If you jump 200 years in the past, that was the year Charles Babbage wrote his thesis about a differential engine. So it took 200 years for computers to take over the world. So interesting to put that in context. Yeah, Kevin.
We know at the moment he's like in the bottom five. So I think it's a matter of just whether he goes up or down from there. But right now he's riding just about where I would expect him to be.
Yeah,
but also as a historian, you know, you got to think of Trump is not unusual. I mean, Trump is right there with Putin and Modi and Lukashenko, Bolsonaro. I mean, there's a number of people very much like Trump all over the world.
We do have that authoritative movement going on.
Yeah, and the question is whether that will overwhelm and sweep democracy away or whether democracy will come back in some kind of form and fight against that.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we're in the middle of that. So it's really hard to tell. As a historian, it'll be very fascinating, even 20, 30 years from now.
We need to devote a whole show to that, don't we?
Yes, oh, we do. So that's my wisdom for today.
Yeah. Well, and we always accept that from you, Bruce. We expect it. And then, by way of segue, Geoffrey Chaucer died today in 1400. Among his many notable quotes, one of particular relevance to today's show is, quote, "Time and tide wait for no man." With that cautionary note in mind, we will shift into our small talk segment without further delay. As I indicated at the beginning, our guests today are Commissioners Wendy Noble and Eric Prine and incoming interim superintendent Tim Johnson. Since this is three of yours, first time on the Brown Briefly, can I ask you to just take a moment and tell us briefly about yourselves, Wendy?
Well, I'm a Midwest transplant. I moved here in 2014 from Wisconsin and have spent my whole life working in healthcare. as a hospital nurse, as a educator, as a family nurse practitioner in settings as varied as the Mayo Clinic and a remote Navajo Health Center. Since I moved here, I did work for a while at the clinic when it was Franciscan and at VCC, and I had the pleasure and honor of serving on the VCC Foundation Board with Truman O'Brien.
Yes, you did.
Right now, I am active in the MRC and the hospital district.
Well, thank you, Wendy, for all the work you do. From a fellow cheesehead, someone I was born here. In Wisconsin myself. Let's move on to who have I got next on the Tim, you want to tell us?
All right. Well, also originally a cheesehead, so that makes a quorum here, I believe. I don't know what a quorum of cheese is. A wheel?
A wheel.
Well, I found myself on Vashon kind of by happenstance during the last great stock market crash of 08. Kind of reinvented myself here in a way I didn't expect. I started working for a nonprofit at Granny's Attic, got involved in the community council, and then it's been one civic project after another, and I've just kind of found that that's my happy spot. I really enjoy living in a community where you can dive in, give back, and also get some results from it, and I'm hoping to do some of that going forward.
You certainly do engage in a lot of public service, and we really do appreciate that. I've seen it in action. Eric?
Well, all you interlopers, I am a Seattle native. grew up in Ballard, spent my career as a journalist, mostly with the Seattle Times. My wife started working on Vashon in 2010. We moved here 3 years later when I retired. Since I've come to the island, I've served on the board of the food bank for 5 years. I hosted a Vashon-centric public affairs interview show right from this very studio, and was elected to the board of the healthcare district just about 3 years ago, and since then it has consumed my life.
Eric, I have to tell you, we really, really miss your show.
Well, thank you.
You did a wonderful job with that, and Voice of Vashon would love to have you come back and do that again, let me tell you.
You'd probably like to maybe move on
and
do that
yourself. There are times when I look forward to being able to ask questions of others instead of being the one questioned.
That's right, yeah. All right, before we dive into it, I wanted to set the stage a little bit and bring up some perspective. And I went to your website, which is an excellent website, the healthcare website, and picked some language out of the mission statement and another section about what the healthcare district does or what it would like to do. The mission statement says, the mission of the Vashon Healthcare District is to promote and maintain the health of the residents of Vashon and Maury Islands by supporting accessible quality health care through community partnerships, shared decision-making, transparency, and responsible stewardship of resources. And then under the section entitled, What Does the Healthcare District Do?, it says we raise funds for healthcare services through an annual property tax levy. Most of us on the island who are property owners are well aware of that. Contract with CMAR to operate the Sunrise Ridge Clinic, lease the clinic building from Sunrise Ridge Health Services. You pay CMAR a monthly subsidy to support clinic operations. You communicate regularly with CMAR about Vashon's healthcare needs and concerns. You monitor quality of care provided at the clinic, and you help inform the community about the clinic's services. Much of your attention, it seems, over the past few months has been focused on your sort of whipsaw relationship with CMAR. As most of us know, CMAR has been providing health care at Sunrise Ridge for approximately 2 years with the help of $3 million, or almost $3 million, in tax-generated subsidies provided by the citizens of Vashon through the Vashon Healthcare District. However, in late August of this year, CMAR announced it was pulling out of Vashon. They said they were going to pull out at the end of the year. But then about a week later, CMAR turned around and said it was staying And in fact, it was not only staying, but it wouldn't need all of the $1.5 million a year subsidy. So that, without getting into all of the detail, and there's a lot of it, first of all, tell me whether or not that's generally correct. And then secondly, tell us where you're at now in terms of what's happening with CMAR. Tim, you want to take that?
Yeah. Well, I don't like the word whipsaw as much as I like the word surprising, frustrating, maybe a little disjointed. I think whipsaw is a good statement about communication, though. We've been doing an awful lot of communicating about each other. There's been an awful lot of op-eds, guilty as charged, in the newspaper, talking about each other. And I think as a member of the task force currently and incoming superintendent, I can tell you that we are talking to each other. And that one of the first talking points is that we probably should be talking to each other and not as much about each other. So I believe the current relationship is cordial and exploratory. And beyond that, I'm still getting up to speed. So I'm going to leave it there and let somebody else jump in if they want to.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, because I would agree with you 100% to talking to one another rather than about one another is... And it's something you've been trying to do. The healthcare district, I think, has been trying to do. Do you want to add anything to that, Eric or Wendy?
No, I think Tim covered the bases pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wanted to just start out by kind of getting an idea of what are the primary healthcare needs on the island. Are they? You know, people talk about, oh, we want an emergency room, or we want dental, or we want, a rheumatologist, or we want whatever the case may be. I mean, what do you think the primary needs are? And I think you've taken health care, you've done some polling or trying to figure out what it is mm-hmm. that the needs are. What's your conclusions?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to be clear about the difference between needs and wants. And the most important thing that a small community like this needs is basically a home base for the entry level into healthcare, which is primary care. So right now we have family medicine, which covers all conditions, all ages, and that's what focus was initially was to make sure that we had a primary care clinic on the island where people could go to get their initial needs met and then have referrals to specialists or other services as needed. So I think that's the most important thing. When we get into what people would like to have, they certainly would like to have some availability of after-hours care, a little bit more robust care for acute injuries and illnesses. People talk about urgent care, which is not realistic in a small community like this, but those kinds of services are important. And then when we talk about sort of what we would like to have enhanced is maybe a smoother referral system to specialists, mm-hmm. More collaboration with behavioral health needs. We know that there's, after the pandemic, a significant increase in behavioral health needs on the island, particularly among the adolescents, young people. And then there are a lot of people who, as people are aging in place, are having health needs that could be best met if we had some sort of home health care. So there are a lot of things that would be lovely to have, but the priority is just basic primary care clinic.
You do work with other organizations on the island to address some of those issues, like Youth and Family Services?
The clinic has been collaborating with Youth and Family Services to provide behavioral health services. We've been just starting to look at what the needs are and who would provide which services. So that should be, hopefully, an ongoing collaboration.
Is CMAR collaborating with any of those organizations, to your knowledge?
The clinic has a behavioral health provider, and that person is communicating with the behavioral health people at VYFS, but there's more that could be done.
Let me ask you this. While I went into that specific, CMAR's been on the island now for about 2 years. Are they meeting the needs that you anticipate, or you would hope that they would be meeting?
They're meeting the needs for basic primary care, yes. We have asked them to look at ways they could provide more after-hours care, more robust acute care coverage, so when people come in with injuries that need to be tended to right now, they can get that done on the island without having to leave. And another need that's really significant that we have not had much success with is some sort of a bilingual person at the clinic to make sure that the needs of our Latino population can be met on the island without having to go off.
Do you know first of all, do you know approximately how many Latino residents we have on the island?
I know that the schools have about 13% Latino kids. So that's some reflection of it. I don't know offhand what percentage of the island self-identifies that way.
I've heard it's somewhere between 750 and 1,000.
I think the census, the 2020 census, showed about 7%, but that's almost certainly an undercount.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Truman.
Yeah, my question for you is, you were talking about CMAR, talking with Fashion Youth and Health Family Services. Do you see the health district's role as coordinating some of those activities? I mean, in particular, the elder care that we were talking about. I mean, I'm very interested in that, obviously, mm-hmm. from VCC. But do you see that as a job of the healthcare district?
Absolutely. I think when we look forward, and we can talk about this a little bit more, if we are no longer subsidizing a primary care clinic, there are many other opportunities for us to be involved. And I think this is an opportunity for the healthcare district to work in collaboration with other agencies and organizations to begin to look at what some of the unmet needs are on the island right. that need additional support.
Right.
Now that we got a little background, let me ask you this. There's a general, insecurity on the part of many people on the island. Relative to the status of healthcare, there rumors abound, and people have trouble understanding what's going on. To a certain extent, as it's my understanding that CMAR is in the process of closing the purchase of a sale for the Spinnaker Building. Is that your understanding?
Well, they have. All we know is what they have told the Beachcomber, and later told us, which is that. They have a tentative deal to acquire the Spinnaker Building property. I just checked this morning in the county records, and they had said that they were planning to close in late October. It's now October 25th, and as of this morning, there was no record of that sale closing. So all we have is at this point is what they said.
And have they said what their intentions are with regards to the Spinnaker Building?
Yeah, they initially said that their plan was to build a new clinic on that property, and then later they said that if they had to, they would remodel the existing building while they built a new clinic in what is now the parking lot of that building. Raises lots of questions that we can't answer.
Well. Part of the confusion arises in that you have also purchased property, have you not? You have actually closed on property near Kathy's Corner.
Right. Uh-huh. We bought 2.5 acres between Kathy's Corner and the PSC Service Center on the west side of the highway at the south edge of town. And closed September 21.
So you've got sort of a... what appears to be a parallel but maybe not coordinated purchase of property by two different groups. Tim?
Yeah, I think uncoordinated is probably the hallmark word for how things have been the last few months. But, it's really too early to say what the ultimate fallout of that is other than we saw a newspaper article titled "A Tale of Two Clinics," and that is definitely not the plan. The plan is not for two competing buildings to be built side by side and race to see who gets finished or anything like that. I think this is, again, one of those things that we are just in the early stages of talking again to CMAR and finding out what their intentions are. And those discussions have a lot to do with more pieces than just buildings and facilities.
Interesting. Truman.
Well, You know, I mean, I know that this is very much up in the air, but just off the top of your head, if they decided to go ahead and complete that sale and develop that property, what would you folks do with the land that you bought then? Would you sell it, or would you try and do something else with it?
Again, that's a really tough question, not knowing the particulars. I mean, the property itself is not going to likely lose value in the short term, nor are we finished delving into issues of what other services and opportunities there are, whether that would go to another agency, whether it would be used for multiple purposes. Those are all part of a strategic plan that has to be developed. And it's really hard to develop a strategic plan until we get to some sort of closure with where we are with regards to CMAR and what our paths are together, side by side, or are conjoined. So I hate to give you a lot of non-answers, but the truth is we don't know.
Actually, Tim, that was exactly what I wanted to hear. Because, I mean, I assumed that would be the case. And I know that was a pie in the sky question, but that was very important to hear that response. Thank you.
The important thing about that property is it's an asset. That we acquired at below market at a below market price.
And, that's good to hear too. Yeah. Bruce, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. I'm a little bit interested in how this sort of a disconnect got started. In my sense is that the health district was looking for oversight. You know, fiduciary responsible oversight, like any health district would have. CMAR sort of reacted to that, sort of, we don't want anybody telling us what to do. Can you sort of explore that a bit? I mean, it seems strange that this disconnect has happened, but it seems to have a genesis point.
Well, I think you summarized it pretty well, Bruce. I think we engaged CMAR. We signed a contract with CMAR for them to operate a primary care clinic on the island on our behalf. We are a governmental entity that is charged by law with providing health care services, and we contracted that to CMAR. And the fundamental tension, and it was present from the beginning, but it became increasingly great as things evolved, was over what role we should play. CMAR had never worked with a public hospital district before. They're used to doing things their own way. We felt an obligation to represent and advocate for the people of Vashon, and ultimately it reached a point where they decided that they did not want to or need to work with us anymore.
And another piece of that is that this is a very different setting than the settings in which most of their clinics are operated. Most of their other clinics are operated in areas that are considered underserved and high need, and they're more urban, and this is a very different community. And we had some challenges in communicating with the CMAR administration how different this community is and how our needs and the community itself are quite different. This is a community that's quite vocal. So
that's an understatement. If I ever heard one.
Vashon is special.
Yeah, we know that. But the thing that strikes me is that I get back to this coordination activity that you folks should. I mean, I see you as being coordinating healthcare activities on the island, not necessarily directing how they're done, but coordinating all of the efforts. And so I don't see why they can't operate as an independent entity and work with you guys just to make sure that everything's covered. I mean, I don't get the disconnect, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I think that's a fair question. The other thing I wanted to add there was this marriage came about during COVID, you had a group of people who are not used to working in a situation like ours, and a district that is brand new trying to figure out its way. And I don't believe that the district has tried to manage the care. I believe the district understands that it has a financial responsibility, both ethically and legally, to its constituents to undertake spending their tax money wisely, and that it needs to understand what it is spending on and how that is spent. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that the ask was all that onerous, but I'd really like to get off of that kind of a situation, because again, that's a us or them situation. And I think really what happened is a lot of people pressed into a tough situation with different expectations, and it needs a reboot. And I think that's where we're at right now. We're rebooting. We're going to find out where we really stand vis-a-vis each other, and we're going to communicate, reach resolution of that, and then move forward either jointly or side by side.
Great.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear. However, there still is this feeling on the part of many people on the island that are we going to have a healthcare facility? Are we going to, if CMAR can turn on a dime, if they can say 1 week, we're gone, we're out of here, we're out of here in 2 months or 3 months, whatever it is, and then a week later say, no, we're going to stay and we're going to provide this and we're going to do that. My question as I hear that is, and then they say that we're going to do it without the full $1.5 million subsidy. We might want to reduce subsidy, or in some time we might want no subsidy. Do you know how CMAR can go from a $1.5 million a year to no subsidy if they were proposing that? What are the sources of their revenue that can support the clinic without the subsidy?
We have the same questions. Their other sources of revenue for the clinic are largely, there are two. One is insurance companies, including the government payers, Medicare and Medicaid, pay them for the services they provide to the patients that are insured by those payers. The second is direct grants from the federal government. But you add up all of those sources of revenue since the clinic opened nearly 2 years ago, and without our subsidy, they would have those other revenues would have only covered 60% of their expenses. So we also want some. One of the things we are seeking from them is some details on how they could sustain a clinic. If they can do it, if they can assure us that they can do it and it doesn't require any tax dollars from us, no problem with that.
You know, let me follow up on that a little bit. The sources of income from either public or private insurance, there's a perception on the part of some people in Vashon that the clinic only serves low-income individuals. Can you straighten us out on that?
Not the case. CMAR, as an organization system-wide, is set up to primarily serve people on Medicaid, the government health insurance program for low-income people, and the uninsured. And the government, federal government, compensates them to make up that difference. On Vashon, it's different. But even off-island, they will see anybody who comes in the door. And just because an organization like CMAR is running the clinic does not mean it's only for low-income people. The doctors have been there. I mean, Jeff Hans Peterson, who's my doc, was there through Highline and through CHI Franciscan and through NeighborCare. And, you know, the providers stay the same.
Truman?
Yeah, one of the... I know that that there is in the Medicaid reimbursement that there is a difference in urban versus rural. If you're depending on how far you are from other healthcare facilities, if you might qualify for this rural designation, and I'm just wondering, it's a considerable higher reimbursement rate for the rural. And one of the reasons that I know that one of the reasons that the urban designation was for Vashon is because of the distance to a major hospital. The fact that you have to go on a ferry did not make any difference because they were looking at as the crow flies distances. Mm-hmm. And I know at VCC we went around and around about that, trying to get this remote or rural designation. Do you know if CMAR has that or if that is a factor in this?
There's a couple of things that come to mind. One is that there is a federal designation called a rural health center, and they did get some. But my understanding is that either the Congress or the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services ended that about a year and a half ago, that avenue is no longer available. And the other is that Vashon is officially designated, an underserved area, medically something, because we don't have enough, and that provides some financial benefits to anybody who were to operate the clinic here. But I'd have to go back and look at my records. But, yeah.
Wendy.
We are considered underserved basically because of the number of providers per population. But we're not underserved in terms of financial need. Hmm. One of the reasons I think why people see CMAR as a poverty clinic is that it is a federally qualified health center, which is a designation by the federal government to identify health centers that will serve high need, lower income communities. And that's why their reimbursement for Medicaid is so much higher than a company or a system like Swedish or UW or MultiCare. Those systems get a higher reimbursement for commercial payers like Blue Cross and Kaiser. And so the fact that it is a FQHC means that its focus is primarily underserved and low-income people. But that doesn't mean it's exclusively those people. It has more to do with their funding.
And in fact, this clinic only gets about 15% of the patients are Medicaid or uninsured.
So on Vashon, the majority are either private insurance or Medicare, is that right?
Mostly Medicare. Yes. Okay. We're old.
I don't need to be reminded. Bruce.
Let me ask you, what's the narrative here? Okay, I mean, CMAR is $430 million a year nonprofit. You know, Vashon Healthcare District is, what, at most $2 million a year? Is this a David versus Goliath, you know, plucky community versus, you know, corporate giant? I mean, what's the story here?
I hesitate to get into the either or adversarial relationship, but I do believe that a lack of common experiences is maybe the biggest problem that we've had here, is that both of us are very different types of organizations and different types of locations, and that there's a cross communication that happens when you thrust a lot of those people together under duress, that later on you sort of come up for air and say, hey, wait a minute, we're halfway down this channel and we don't know where we're going or who we're with. So I think, to be fair to all parties involved, it's been a less of a clash of adversaries and more of a fundamental misunderstanding of different entities.
Well, you know, let's take that a little bit further. I'll take you down the slippery slope a little bit.
Sure.
Maybe give you a hypothetical. The hypothetical is that CMAR says, yeah, we're going to stay. We don't want your subsidy anymore. We don't want your advice anymore. What role then is there for the healthcare district?
Actually, we see this as potentially an opportunity. So going back to what we mentioned earlier, our mission statement says that we are to support accessible quality healthcare. It doesn't say we are to fund a primary care clinic. So if we go back to that mission statement, this is an opportunity for us to look around the community and see what other healthcare needs there are and how the healthcare district can begin to collaborate more with other organizations and agencies on the island to provide perhaps an umbrella for collaboration and communication and coordination among health services. So I think this is an opportunity for us to move beyond a very narrow role that we've had.
Truman?
Well, on the island, we have a number of healthcare providers other than CMAR. I mean, there are a lot of private practice that are non-traditional medicine. I mean, all kinds of things. Do you see your efforts at coordinating those organizations?
Yes, exactly. I think one of the things that I've noticed as I've looked at that issue is that many of these folks operate in silos, mm-hmm. and we don't have any system for people to be collaborating with each other to say, I do this, you do that, how can we serve this patient that we're both seeing better? So perhaps this is an opportunity for us to begin to collaborate more.
I know that it, again, I'm sorry, I have to go back to my own experience, mm-hmm. but I know at VCC, one of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the social services network that is operating, that there was no place for coordination of transportation, for home care, for all of those odd mm-hmm. pieces. Do you see the healthcare district as providing that kind of a service?
I think that's one of the things that we can begin to look at, is, again, to be sort of an umbrella mm-hmm. for looking at how different organizations support each other on the island. It's not a surprise to anybody, but one of the challenges is staffing. Every agency on this island mm-hmm. Is looking at how do we get people to come to the island in light of the ferry system, the cost of living here, the cost of renting. That's been a challenge at the clinic, and that's going to be our main challenge.
Sorry to be hogging here, but this gets me back to, what is the potential for a centralized scheduling, a centralized, you know, so that some maybe centralized bookkeeping for some of these folks? Because I know that each of those individual organizations have to do that, and it gets to be very onerous for those individuals. Could the healthcare district do something like that?
There are all kinds of things we could do. I think we'd be getting ahead of our skis a bit if we started talking about what we are going to do. What I would like to see us, assuming that primary care is taken care of mm-hmm. and we don't need to spend our tax dollars on that, I would want us to really undertake a rigorous planning process and assessing the needs and reaching out to the community to determine what they perceive the needs are. Right. And then developing a plan from there. Right. And just for what it's worth, there are 50-some public hospital districts around the state. And while most of them, in fact, operate hospitals, they do other stuff, too. I mean, there's a public hospital district in Soap Lake, Washington, that mm-hmm. runs a skilled nursing facility. Right. There are, the public hospital district on Lopez Island, among other things, subsidizes physical therapy. The charge in the law is to provide health care services, and it doesn't say what.
Right. Mm-hmm. That actually brings me to a question I have to ask, because I've had so many people ask me to ask it. Do you, during your meetings, especially during your budget meetings, do you consider scenarios where the tax levy might be reduced under certain circumstances in the future?
We had a stimulated discussion about the upcoming budget at our last board meeting last week, and we're just beginning to work on our 2023 budget. It's challenging because there are so many unknowns that we are facing right now.
You do reevaluate that your source of revenue from the tax. Is that what I'm understanding?
Reevaluate, what do you mean?
Well, you look at it from time to time to see whether or not you want to up it,
oh,
keep
sure.
it the same, or lower it.
Every year, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's what we're in the beginning of starting to do right now.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay. We're going to wrap it up. I just want to ask you, what are the next steps? I assume you're going to continue to attempt to communicate with CMAR and get on a better relationship and footing with one another.
I think that's the big word that we're looking at right now is we're pivoting to engaging on multiple fronts. One of the things that I am soon to be paid to do is talking to a lot of the people that I already work with in the social service network to start that collaborative process of what the needs are. And simultaneously digging in and doing our best to understand both the needs and the desires of CMAR in their efforts to provide care on the island and if and how we fit into that, and then best model our finances and our strategic thrust going forward on those issues. So it's a lot to take on all at once. But this has not been a process where a bunch of people have been sitting around not thinking about it. It took a little bit of a detour, but it's coming right back to where we started out on the campaign, which was having a long-term and a short-term perspective as to how to best serve the island in a sustainable way and to provide the most health care that we can reasonably and effectively.
Okay. And citizens, if they want to keep informed, your meetings, are they open to the public?
Yes, we meet on the first and third Wednesdays of every month at the Presbyterian Church at 6 p.m., the hybrid meetings in person, and people can observe and participate on Zoom as well. We just, you mentioned it earlier, we have posted a brand new website that Wendy was very involved in putting together. We still have to do some fine-tuning there. But we're hoping that will be a better source of information for the community than it has been in the past.
And that probably has a link to the meeting, Zoom, or will?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that active? I mean, is that active now, the website?
Right. It's gone live. It just needs to be updated in light of the constant changes.
Right. And what is the website?
VashonHealthcare.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
VashonHealthcare.org.
I think the other thing that's been going on, you've seen the commissioners out on the streets, engaged in office hours. And as a local islander, I can invite people, if you have questions, complaints, disputes, suggestions, I will make myself easy to find, and I love to talk healthcare with anyone who wants to walk up and talk to me about it anywhere.
You have seen, you have been very, available. I've walked past the hardware store and seen you all sitting out there, or some of you sitting out there from time to time.
Yeah, with their hair blown back.
Yeah, Truman, you got one more?
I got one thing, and that is I want to say, Tim, I am absolutely, personally, I'm absolutely delighted to see you take this interim position. And I hope this works out and you bring your expertise to help these folks, because I think you're going to be a real asset. So, and thank you guys very much. Too.
Thank all of you. Now, you. Don't leave us if you can stay for the last 15 minutes.
Thanks
so
much for having us.
Oh, yeah. No, we appreciate it. Anything that throws light on this situation, I think, is helpful for the community and allays some anxieties and fears. You probably will be listening 2 weeks from today. On the Brown Briefly, when we will be joined by Mary Bartolo, the Executive Vice President of CMAR, Mike Leone, Vice President of Corporate and Legal Affairs, and Jesus Sanchez, Senior Vice President of Operations for the Northern Region. They will all be here on Election Day, November 8th, and we will have the same sort of discussion at that time. With that, I'm going to move on. And I'd encourage you to jump in on these subjects, our guests, to jump in as well, if you feel like it. These are huge subjects, and I'm not going to get into, obviously, we don't have time for all of them, but this one really caught my attention. I was looking at more and more Republican candidates are espousing, quote, Christian nationalism, and which has been fairly roundly condemned by the leaders of virtually all the Christian churches in the United States. But a September poll by Politico found that 61% of Republicans and 17% of Democrats believe the United States should declare itself a Christian nation. U.S. law should be subservient to Christian laws, and Democrats are demoncrats who must be seen as, quote, evil, less than human, and a serious threat to the nation. How dangerous a movement do you see this?
Bruce.
Oh, it's incredibly dangerous. I mean, you see what's going on in Europe, in Belarus and in Hungary, I mean, it's a sense of anytime, cultures go through rapid change and rapid threats and COVID on top of it, you see reactionary sort of let's go back to basics kind of stuff. And there's always been the strain in American politics in the 1930s, Father Conklin, there's always been that sense of America as a Christian nation, often not articulated clearly. And even though, the Constitution clearly separates, church and state, it hasn't always been that way. And in most instances, it's been in favor of Christian nationalism in the United States. But articulating it and turning it into policy is what I think is incredibly dangerous.
Mm-hmm. What always fascinates me is that we have these things, you know, printed or chiseled into our monuments. I mean, the Supreme Court. What does it say about the Supreme Court? I mean, there's something there about one of the Ten Commandments. Anyway, you see that throughout our history. And how do we justify that? How do we balance that? That's my question.
Well, it's an interesting sort of a disconnect. I mean, these folks are the ones who rail against Sharia law, you know, and sort of Islamic nationalism, if you will, you know, who see Modi in India and Hindu nationalism as a threat to democracy. And yet here in the United States, they're espousing Christian democracy. I mean, it's an incredible disconnect, and that's what makes it so dangerous.
Yeah. Yes, Kevin.
Well, we've seen a parade of topics that are designed to divide us. This certainly is one that's has deep roots in so many people's belief systems, as you just mentioned. It's some of the founding statements right around our governance has reflected religious connotations. I can tell you my Italian family says that they emigrated to this country to escape religious persecution in their home country. So I think that we need to recognize that we are being manipulated by this type of issue, and that it's important, just as we talked today during the whole show, you know, it's more important that we work collectively together to advance for our common needs and interests than find opportunities to divide us. So I hope we can reject this. I do see it as equally dangerous as what Bruce said.
Yeah. I think so, too. Another quick question for you, topic, is the British Prime Minister. Liz Truss had this rather embarrassing six-week tenure as the Conservative Prime Minister. Her economic plan was grounded on cutting taxes for the rich, which seems to parallel the plan that is being promised by the Republican Party, should they retake Congress. What do you make of that worldwide situation? Kevin?
I just have to say this is like an Anthony Scaramucci, but not quite as quick.
That's right.
I think he was 8 days or maybe.
Yeah, that's four. Right. Yeah, that's
he might have got to double digits. So thank goodness Liz, you know, was able to endure. It sure sounds to me like the Brits after Brexit, after all the promises, after all the freedom and espoused economic advantage that has, of course, not turned into any of those things. I hope the Brits will find a footing that will enable them to basically get some financial stability. They are one of our most important allies in the world. And we deserve to see them successful.
Mm-hmm. This constant pendulum swing to trickle down economics, which is what Ms. Truss seemed to be attempting to do, hasn't worked well every time it's attempted, at least that I know of. Bruce, do you know?
I like to call it tinkle down.
That has a real different connotation there,
yeah,
Bruce.
That's right. Yeah. But no, it hasn't worked well. And I'm very encouraged by the numbers of early voters that are showing up and the number of mail ballots that are coming in way early. So, you know, maybe people are starting to see through the veil that the Republicans have put up about the economics of tinkle down, you know, economics.
Yeah,
that's
I agree.
My hope, at least.
I agree. I think we're almost ready to wrap it up. I wanted to thank Wendy and Eric and Tim and Kevin and Truman and Bruce. And I'm Craig Bellis. We will be seeing you next week for the Brown Briefly when our guests are Emilio Peltike and Erica Ellison of the Byrne Design Lab. And then 2 weeks, three representatives from CMAR. So thank you all, and we'll see you next week.